If you're especially vulnerable, protection against COVID-19 is priceless. The good news is spring COVID-19 vaccinations are free if you're age 75 or over or immunosuppressed. Get your vaccine as soon as you're invited. Be wise. Immunise against COVID-19. Find out if you qualify at nhs.uk.
This is Our People Podcast, telling the stories behind South Tyneside and Sunderland NHS Foundation Trust.
Hello, my name is Fiona Thompson. I am our Trust's Media and PR Manager, and I am very happy to be joined by Tina Morell, who is our Programme Manager, and you are going to take us through a little bit of detail about our brand new eye hospital, which is under construction. So Tina, welcome.
Thank you very much, Fiona.
Do you want to kick us off by telling us a little bit about your background and your career with the NHS?
How long have you got? It's rather lengthy. So I started my nursing career back in 1980 and moved into Sunderland in 1985. Worked in a variety of places, culminating as a matron. Worked for 3 years as a matron and then decided that actually I'd like to move into the management side, and became a deputy business manager, as we were called in those days, for two directorates, head and neck and general surgery and urology, because it was one directorate then. And then around 2006, 2007, something like that, I became the directorate manager for the newly formed Directorate of Urology, as we merged with County Durham and Darlington Foundation Trust for that directorate. So that was quite an interesting time. And then since then I've managed a number of directorates. All have been very different to each other, but all with some really, really good points. So emergency care was amazing, and ophthalmology as well. And then about four years ago, I was offered this amazing opportunity to become the programme manager for the new eye hospital build.
And what a project to be involved in.
Oh, yes.
And you mentioned directorates there, and so I didn't know about directorates until I joined the NHS, but we kind of have family trees with different areas of our care, and directorates kind of take care of different branches of the services that we offer, don't they? So people do tend to move around those and get different experiences. So yes, it's really interesting to know that you worked in a totally different area before this. At what point did you become involved in the eye hospital plans?
So I think back, it was December, it would have been December 2019 when I was offered the opportunity to take this up. Prior to that, I had been the directorate manager for ophthalmology, but when we merged with South Tyneside Trust, I was moved into general surgery, so kind of lost what was happening with the proposals because they'd been going on for a number of years, and then found out that we were definitely going to move ahead with this, and had a conversation with my boss Peter Sutton at the now, and we agreed that I would be able to take that up given my background knowledge of ophthalmology, my awareness of the requirements, and to be honest, a deep passion for actually taking this forward, I think.
Yeah. So what are the reasons? I mean, anybody who's visited Sunderland Eye Infirmary will probably know this for themselves, but what are the real reasons behind us wanting to build a new hospital? And can you give us a bit of background about how it is as it stands and what it offers?
Yeah, sure. So if you've ever been to the current eye infirmary, you can see straight off that it's been there for many years. It was actually started being built in 1938 and was eventually officially opened in 1946 by the then Princess Elizabeth, our recent queen, who's passed away. The building itself, because some of the infrastructure is so old, dating back to the 30s and the 40s, it isn't really fit for purpose. It fails regularly. I mean, at least once a week there's something, there's a burst pipe or there's a leaking roof or there's something that isn't working particularly well. Added to that, the ways of working for NHS has changed considerably since those days. I mean, we're talking pre-NHS there, you know, in terms of when it opened, and how we've moved from patients coming in and spending maybe 3 weeks to have their cataract surgery done to having it done within, an hour and a half, really, now within the day case area. you didn't need all the inpatient beds. So every area has been altered over the years, bit by bit, to create better spaces for the staff and everything. And actually now it's a little bit of a maze. It's difficult to get round for sight impaired patients. There is only one lift, that kind of thing. And the amount of money that would be required to maintain it ongoing is probably more than we're going to be spending on building a new hospital that's designed for the future.
Because our estates colleagues do a fantastic job of fixing things and repairing things, but the reality is you can't keep on top of this sometimes. It's, you know, it's not a flexible building at all, is it? And I think when you walk down the corridors, you can see it's, you know, it is as it is, and it can't be used in some of the ways that we need to use it.
Well, we can't knock down walls at all because of the fact that, you know, the walls do contain asbestos, unfortunately, but that's the way they were built in those days. And and you can't just suddenly, you know, make something be what you want it to be when you've got constraints like that.
But you know, being kind of on the ground as one of the team, how well regarded the services are there?
Absolutely. I mean, despite the fact that it's a failing infrastructure, the feedback that we get from patients and visitors is absolutely phenomenal. The care is of such a high standard because the team just works so well together, and they're all working for that same patient, really, because the patients do tend to come back very regularly for a number of years, sometimes lifetime, and they go around the different departments because one kind of problem tends to lead to another, unfortunately, with ophthalmology.
Yeah, and we see very young patients, don't we? Little children come into us, and people right throughout their life who have sight problems.
We have consultants who go and see the neonates at the Royal Hospital, and obviously care for those children. And then we have babies going up to adulthood, and then obviously right through the age groups, of course. The children, 100% are day cases if they come in, really. They don't need to stay overnight. There's not a great deal of work that would require a patient to stay overnight now for ophthalmology anyway, but certainly the children. And I think the new build is going to benefit the children tremendously, because obviously at the moment we can't really put in some of the things that we would like to do to make sure that the care for children is optimised.
Yeah. And for some of our patients who might have mobility issues as well, it's just sometimes quite hard to physically get through the door, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Probably wasn't built with modern days in mind and accessibility.
Not at all.
Ins and outs as well. So it'd be good to see those things. But we're going to come into a little bit more detail about that, because why don't you start telling us a little bit more about your role with the new build. So what's your job actually involved?
So my role as the programme manager has been kind of multifaceted, really. Initially, in the first year, it was very much about producing the business case that was required to actually get this off the ground. And for anyone who's ever produced a large business case, they'll know that when I got to version 17, it was really, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's. But thankfully that was approved, obviously, so that went forward. Then I've been very much responsible for facilitating the planning and design from the clinical side of things. So I've worked closely with the clinical teams. We've had a consultant clinical lead, Mark Doherty, who's been very much involved with the planning and design as well. And with the clinical staff knowing what it is that patients need, then that was really helpful for me. Working closely with the architects, Riders, to make sure that what we needed from a clinical point of view was actually being transferred onto a piece of paper to provide us with the design that we actually wanted. Obviously working with the estates teams as well, as well as, you know, engineers, you know, all sorts of people, really. We took probably 2.5 years, really, to design the building. So a lot of what I was doing was very much facilitating sessions with the staff, And unfortunately, because of the COVID pandemic, a lot of that had to be done with just one or two people from each department socially distanced. And then I would meet with the architects via Teams meetings and then pass on that information and then feedback again. And we would, week after week, continue to do that kind of thing. I've also been very much involved from the communication side of things with the public engagement that was carried out. And there were a number of us that we had to undertake some communications training to be able to do this. But we did online engagement sessions with the public, and there were a number of focus groups carried out and things as well. And then I've been invited to various different meetings and things to continue that. So, yeah, it's been interesting. And now very much involved in the procurement side, looking at all of the equipment, working with the director and manager around all of the workforce, working with colleagues around fundraising, artworks, lots and lots of various things that have been happening. So yes, very multifaceted role.
Lots of plates are spinning. And so you've already mentioned a couple of organisations there. So we've got Riders, who are the architect, and we should say that this project is being carried out in partnership with Sunderland City Council, because it is going to be built in, and it is being built as we speak, on the old Vogue site, as people will know it. So it'll be right in the city centre. It's part of the Riverside plans, so there's lots of other things going on there. It's a great website that you can have a look at, and it tells you about all the different buildings that are underway and the ones that have already kind of opened. So we've got City Hall, so we'll just be along from Sunderland City Council's headquarters. And there's lots of other businesses that are going to be our neighbours, and there's going to be some residential places built as well, and cafes and restaurants and all sorts of different stuff. So it's going to be the place to be, isn't it?
It is indeed. It's going to be really good.
It is. And so how long is this project going to take? Because I know we've got a spade in the ground already, but I think we're looking towards a kind of 2-year timeline.
Yeah, originally it was always identified as a 2-year build. And we were able to break ground at the very end of November just last year, but it's likely to be in the spring of 2026 when it's completed and we're able to move into the building, and that's hopefully worst case scenario, but yes.
And I guess I'm sure there were lots of conversations about where the future site could be, but really the city centre's perfect,
The city centre is perfect. I mean, the transport links are so much more improved to what they currently are to the current Eye Infirmary. If you're travelling from South Tyneside to Sunderland, you've got to get at least 2 buses, perhaps 3, and maybe even have to walk for a little distance as well, depending on whereabouts you're coming from. But literally within a 5-minute walk of the new hospital, you've got metro stations, you've got the train station, with the new walkway bridge across the river, you'll be able to come across from the north side of Sunderland anyway, direct. There's a fabulous new multi-storey car park very close by. We do have parking obviously on site for patients and relatives, but the access is absolutely brilliant, and a number of bus services that obviously come straight into the town. So yes, much, much easier for people to get to, and almost a direct link to the A19.
Absolutely, and there's going to be a landmark building in the city centre as well, which we'll be very proud about.
Absolutely.
It'll be great to see it on that final day when it opens. But when you're sitting at your desk, how would you even begin to design a hospital? You must have to be the most organised person going.
So I can't accept personal responsibility for the overall design. I was there facilitating and supporting people. I think we've got to give credit where credit's due. Yes, to the architects, who clearly have background knowledge of healthcare buildings and the healthcare building regulations and notes that they have to follow, and have guided us through that entirely. What we did right at the very beginning was, when we were able, I think we had 2 sessions where we had the staff, a larger group of staff, before we unfortunately had to, because of COVID, start socially distancing. And what Riders did there was they teased out from the teams what it was that they really, really liked about the current Eye Infirmary, and therefore what was it that they've wanted to feel in the new building. So we were able to look at things like the colour schemes and the adjacencies, the different departments that needed to rely on each other, how the patients got around the building. So it was the patient flow, the equipment flow, all of that kind of thing. But yes, it was very much about how the feel of the building was, and the history behind that building as well, because it's very dear to people's hearts. So that was kind of what we did, and that formed the principles of what people wanted the building to be like. And then we started looking at each of the individual areas. The adjacencies obviously formed where things would be in the building, so that we would have the emergency department obviously on the ground floor. We've got the retinal unit on the ground floor, so that the more elderly patients don't have to get in the lift or go up the stairs or what have you. And then the other departments obviously go over the four floors that the building is over.
And we're going to have a little outside area as well, is that right? We've got some landscaping around outside, so it's going to be...
So there's a 90-space car park, and around the area there is some landscaping. It's quite a tight site, to be honest, so it's not... We haven't got lush gardens or anything like that, but we've certainly got some green spaces, and that includes actually what we call a dog spend area, so that when the guide dogs come, they have somewhere to go and get a drink of water and have a little walk with somebody.
We do have some fairy visitors to the Iron Fairy. When I was there the other day, I was like, we talked about this before in the office, because I'd found out about this little space, and I was like, I don't think I've ever seen any guide dogs. And I came down the stairs, there was this lovely dog at the bottom of the stairs with its owner. And I suppose that's just another consideration. We're not just talking about our patients and their family members. We're talking about those who work alongside us.
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we'll have to keep an eye out for our little fairy friends.
So there is an outside space that the staff will be able to access, like a terrace, where from the seminar rooms and the boardroom you can get out from that, but that really won't be public access, unfortunately, because of where it's situated. But the access to the Galleys Gill is literally just next to us, and the council are busy obviously making that into a really nice garden area and landscaped area as well, so it will be quite green around there, I believe.
Can't wait to see how, when it's finished, to see how it's all, because we do have a bit of green space around us at the Sunday Night Firm,
we do.
It's not really kind of, there's not really any picnic tables or places you can sit and read a book and just get away from your desk for a little while, so that'll be good. And I'm sure it'll be so much more handy for people to get to and from as well, so as well as our patients. And you've been working alongside our patients, our partners, our stakeholders, so those who work alongside our visitors, as well as our staff. So what's gone into talking to those who use our service to find out what they want to see provided as part of this new building?
So you're right, there's been a variety of people who we've engaged with to understand what it is that people need, not just obviously the architects and Kia as the contractor now, Sunderland City Council obviously, the RNIB have been very much involved, they have provided us with a lot of advice and guidance in terms of what sight impaired patients might need, in terms of colour, etc. And the public engagement online sessions that we did, we had a number of questions to ask people. What was it that they liked about the Eye Infirmary? What was it they hoped to have from a new building? And it was things like the lighting and the colour schemes, not having big, bright, bold colours all over the place, but also making sure that we have got the differences between floors and walls and doors and things like that, so that people can really navigate around. And obviously things like wayfinding, signage, that kind of thing, very much like that. And we've got a number of new areas within the building that we currently don't have. So something like a day of surgery admissions unit, which we don't have. We have to use the ward at the moment as that area, so patients are admitted to the ward before they go to theatre. Whereas in the new build, they won't go near the ward, they'll go to the day of surgery admissions unit. We've got an ambulatory care area that we've developed that we currently don't have, so again those patients that are only coming in for a few hours for some treatment don't need to be admitted to the ward. And the ward itself, we've agreed that we don't need the large number of beds that we've currently got, because we don't have so many people overnight, and so we've got 8 single occupancy ensuite bedrooms, which will be absolutely amazing for the patients who are coming in going forward.
That'll be kind of what you want when you're looking to recuperate and to recover, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Quiet in your own space.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, that'd be lovely to see. So once a bit of fact finding had been done, what did the architects then set about doing?
So clearly the architects have got considerable experience in what they do, and they were advising us all the way. So once we'd agreed the adjacencies of the different departments and things, it was about looking at what was needed within that particular area. So if I pick something specifically like the emergency department, for instance, where the current eye infirmary emergency department is very small, it's higgledy-piggledy because the rooms that we've had to use have been reallocated over the years, and the floor is not particularly very good. But we knew that we were implementing a telephone triage system while we were also doing the plans. So we had to explain to the architects how we worked, how the clinical team actually work, and what they would expect their patients to do when they came in. So the architects had to listen to what the clinical team was saying about how the patient came in. So you might have somebody who walked in, you might have somebody who came in a chair, you might have somebody who comes by ambulance, you might have somebody who comes with a couple of guards because they're handcuffed and things like that. And you have to think about how those patients individually come into the department, but then what needs to happen. So they need to be checked in, they need to be assessed by a nurse, so the triage takes place, and then they may or may not need some treatment, so they then move on to the next bit. And the architects, in terms of the emergency department, then came up with a series of places where the patient would go to so that it flowed from one to the other to the next one, and then there was then just one way back out of that department so that the patient wasn't coming and going and then getting lost, if you like, if you think. And each of the departments did exactly the same thing to think how that patient would come round. So we did all of those discussions, as I said, in a room with a couple of people from each department, and different people would dip in and out, and then feed that back to the architects, who then would amend their plans that they'd originally come up with. And it became an evolving process of discussions, documentation, drawings given to us that we then would look at and kind of follow the patient through the plan to then decide whether that worked or didn't work, and then go back to the architects with some amendments again. And that whole process took at least 2.5 years before we came up with a final plan and signed off what we call the C sheets, which are the room scheduling sheets. And there we can't make any changes whatsoever. And that keeps being reiterated now to staff. Yeah.
And I should say this episode kicks us off on a little bit of a mini-series about the eye hospital patterns, because I'm going to go speak to all different departments, or as many as I can possibly get round, and also ask them the question about, you know, what went into thinking about your new area, and, you know, how do you feel about the new plan. So I'm sure they will give us a bit of an insight into what they're looking forward to and what they found as being a challenge. And you mentioned even at the podcast that will never happen, how we deal with prisoners, because we do take prisoners who come to us as patients, and lots of consideration has to be given into security and safety about everybody involved in there. But again, that's one of the things that you suppose you, when you sit down to design a new hospital, you're going to have to think about those things.
We have to consider, you know, where is the swipe access, where do patients get in and out easily, and lockdown procedures, you know, in the event of any kind of situation that might occur. All of that has to be considered. So there is a security strategy, there's an engineering strategy, everything that comes into that, and it's, you know, pulling it all together.
Every finer point has been thought about.
Absolutely.
And so we've already sat around the table as a group to talk about the plans to move into the hospital, even though it's going to be quite a task, and obviously the building doesn't exist yet, but we've got to start making the move, haven't we? So that is a challenge and a half. So what conversations are happening so that, I mean, when the services do open, I imagine it might just be section by section, or it might just be day one, I don't know. But, you know, that there's quite a lot of thought going into the IT infrastructure, making sure everything's there kit-wise. There's a lot of equipment to go, isn't there? And there's also new equipment to go in.
There is,
and we're also going to get some new super special stuff. And our charity is working really hard to provide some additional bits of equipment. So going on holiday is one task, but moving into an entirely different bit, or moving house, but moving into an entirely new hospital is really quite a challenge, isn't it?
I think moving into the build will need to be like military precision, to be honest. And as you say, we've already started to plan what we're calling the mobilisation. It does feel like a military operation, that, doesn't it? We've looked at which clinical areas depend highly on each other, so that we don't move one without the other if that's essential. So something like the theatre, the main theatre and the ward can't move without the other, because obviously that just wouldn't work. It's likely to take a period of about 4 to 6 weeks in total, we anticipate, but we are still in the process of planning that. And the reason for that is, yes, we've got some new equipment that is going into the building, which will be absolutely fabulous, but the equipment that we've already got, if it's in good working order, we're not going to replace it now just for the sake of it. It has to come with us, which means that we can't have that in two places at once, so we've got to think about that. From an IT perspective, it will take some considerable time for the IT team to actually set things up. And again, if the IT kit is in good working order, it is going to come with us. It has to. We can't afford to just fill a new hospital with all brand new equipment and forget about what we've already got. It has to come with us. So what we've started to look at, as I say, is the interdependencies between the departments. And something like our photography department, or imaging as I should call it now, is very much needed for most places. So we're going to have that in two places while we move. And people like facilities, because they'll need to come in and clean it, and then they'll want to come back and clean it again when we've moved something in. Equipment needs setting up, it needs commissioning, it needs calibrating, all that kind of thing. So we'll be working with EBME and external suppliers for what we have to do with that. And you know, we've even simple things such as actually informing the Royal Mail that we're moving addresses, that kind of thing has to be considered. But the biggest thing of all, I really believe, is making sure that we've got a robust new timetable in place for all of the clinicians, and that's not just the consultants, the junior doctors, but all the allied health professionals and the nursing staff as well that deliver services, because we won't be moving like-for-like clinics. We need to make a change to how we're working because of the way that the departments are going to be set up. So our clinical director and the directorate manager have got a big task on the hand, at least 6 months before we move in, to be able to develop that so that we can then schedule all of the new clinics and get all of that sorted as well.
Yeah.
Added to that, we're in the process of becoming paper light. And we're implementing a system called MediSite at the Eye Infirmary now, which is a business as usual thing. It's not reliant on the new build by any means, but it does mean that we'll be moving to a paper light system and won't require all the hard copy notes and things like that. So that should all be concluded and implemented ahead of us moving into the new build. So there's an awful lot going on. Yeah.
And everything will be in its right place at the right time when patients walk through the door, and insurance, you know, it's safety first, and everything will just will go when it's good and ready. And you know, you've talked a lot about the equipment there, and you know, when you walk around the Eye Infirmary, just you peek behind doors, there's so much equipment in there, and it's all top notch stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. But getting that from one place to the other is going to be
It will be quite difficult, because obviously some of it will need the companies to come back in and make sure that it's calibrated properly, particularly you know, things like our slit lamps, and the slit lamp is very much the essential for an ophthalmology clinic appointment. You can't go without sitting with a slit lamp. But things like all of the imaging equipment as well, that is thousands of pounds that we're talking about, and to move that, we've got to be very careful with how we move it. We might need specialist movers. Some of the companies have offered to move them for us so that they know what they're doing with them and things, and then they can set them up in the new building. But yeah, unfortunately, I mean, at some point there will have to be a slowing of activity for us to actually move over, and then again at some point the directorate will need to consider how they recover that activity that unfortunately has had to be slowed during the move.
But we do play quite an important part about the regional care we offer, because while we're South Tyneside and Sunderland, the reality is we are NHS across the board, and I know that we take patients from Cumbria and well north of us.
Yeah, we get patients coming to the Eye Infirmary from all over the country. I mean, most people have heard of Moorfields, and we do get referrals from Moorfields in the same way that we refer to Moorfields. But yes, patients come from Cumbria. We've had patients from Scotland in the past. Yeah, so there's a variety of patients come, and that's partly to do with the skills and expertise that we've got, but it's certainly to do with the reputation nationally that we've got for the eye infirmary. Since the impact of COVID has been felt considerably by every trust, an ophthalmology directorate is no different. But actually, the Sunderland Directorate of Ophthalmology is doing considerably better than many other areas, and we do get approached regionally to actually support the services being delivered from other areas as well.
And again, if you're coming from somewhere beyond our little patch here, it's just going to be so much easier to either follow the signs to get into Sunderland City Centre, the traffic isn't usually that bad, and or come off the train or the metro or a bus, or even sense into a taxi driver and it'd be in the city centre. It's just going to be so much easier. Even though the eye infirmary's been there so long, most people know where it is, but even so, it's not the easiest place to find sometimes.
It's not where it currently is situated, and like we were talking about before, I think there's one bus stop outside the eye infirmary, and there aren't that many buses that actually come along in that direction. It's a very residential area, but in the town, yes, there's certainly going to be a lot more access for patients to be able to come and go quite easily.
Yeah. I know one question that people who are listening might have is what's going to happen to the future of the eye infirmary site as it stands, and we just don't know, is it, at the moment?
We don't know. I mean, it's a prime site, but you know, obviously the current building will have to be considered, and considered carefully given the infrastructure that's within it.
Yeah, we'll I'm sure we'll inform people when the time comes when we know ourselves what's going to happen about that, because it is a key site in the city. And you've already described a little bit about what the building's going to be like. So it's going to be four stories. Mm-hmm. It's going to have some landscaping and some parking outside, but inside it's going to look hugely different to what we have already, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we have got some images which we've shared before, we can share again.
Yeah.
But it is going to, if you were describing it to somebody, how would you, when you step in that door, what's it going to look like? What kind of space is it going to have?
Clearly, it's going to look more of its time in terms of its modernity. Yes, we've got a what we class as an atrium area as you go in, because it's a two-floor height ceiling in the just as you walk in the main entrance, with a feature staircase that will take you up to the first floor. Clearly, we've got a lift area, and that's one of the greatest things, I think, is because currently we've got one lift at the eye infirmary that does break down, unfortunately, on a fairly regular basis, which causes a deal of problems for our patients. But in the new build, we've actually got four lifts to access, which is brilliant. But yes, it'll be very light and spacious as you go in. There's an RVS area just as you come in on the left hand side, with some seating area. The pharmacy is on the ground floor as well. We have a welcome desk as you come in. It's not a reception desk, it's a welcome desk, so that actually we can direct patients to the right place. Obviously, when we first move in, it'll be really busy in that area, but certainly it gives our patients and relatives an opportunity to actually come and see somebody at the desk and just ask any questions that they want, and hopefully we'll be able to answer that. It is over four clinical floors, so the ground floor, as I've said, emergency department and retinal, with the pharmacy and a few other bits and pieces, and then the first floor is predominantly the outpatients department, which incorporates our optometry departments and our orthoptics department, and there's also a dining facility as well, which will be run by the RVS. And then on the second floor, as you go up, we've got our main theatres, our day of surgery admissions unit, and the ward area all together, incorporating the ambulatory care, as I've mentioned. And then the top clinical floor is the Cataract Treatment Centre, which, as many people know, is a nationally renowned clinical service. And we did hope within the new build to retain the way that it works. And we've followed the flow of patients that we currently have into the new build, expanding it by an extra theatre and therefore everything that comes with that. But they've also got their own smaller outpatient area, so the cataract patients that come for their outpatient clinic will meet the staff that will then be potentially in their day case procedure when they come in for that. So that's really good. And additionally, up there, we've got an administrative open plan office space where all of the consultants and the secretaries will be housed, along with the our scheduling appointments team as well.
It sounds like it's going to be, I mean, the eye infirmary is really, really busy, but it sounds like it's going to be a hive of activity.
It will.
All around the clock. And how do you think, and what's the kind of biggest difference that you've, or the comment that people have said about how it's going to make a difference to them? Is it just the fact that it's going to be where it is and it's going to be so much more modern?
I think because we're building it fit for purpose, and I appreciate that in, you know, another 50 years time, that may not be the purpose of what is required at that point in time, because you know, healthcare changes minute by minute sometimes, never mind year by year. But it certainly will be more fit for purpose than the current site is. As we've said, you know, it's difficult for patients to navigate around, and we can't make the patient flow any better than it currently is. But within the new building, we think we've got it set so that actually patients will only need to go to their area where they're going. They won't need to come up and down the stairs to go to photography, because we've got two separate photography areas that we'll have where the outpatients will be. They don't need to go to the ward, then go to theatres and back again and things like that. They'll be in the same areas, and hopefully we'll have, you know, the right patients in the right places without them having to move any further around the hospital, which is much better for sight impaired patients.
Because I get lost, I've been in the Iron Fairy a million times now, and I still get lost every single time. So, and obviously, even though it's got loads of signs up, I still find myself going around and around the circle. So that is good to know for people like me who get lost very easily. Now, I've been very lucky to catch you before you set off on your retirement. So you will be handing over the reins to a very capable colleague, which will be really handy, and I'm sure you'll be keeping up to speed with what's going on. And you know, I'm sure you will love to walk through the doors when it finally opens and keep an eye on how it's going. But what have you found the biggest challenge during the project so far? And what have you enjoyed the most in terms of working on it?
I think first off, I have to honestly say that I've had the best 4 years of my career doing this job. It's been an honour and a privilege to actually be in the position that I've been in, and supporting the clinical team to develop what's been on the cards for, as far as I know, at least 10 years. So that you know, that has been something that I've really, really enjoyed. The challenges have varied, I suppose. Probably the biggest challenge that we've had is that we actually had to do all of this while we were in the COVID lockdown times. And where we would normally have had something called an RPIW, a Rapid Improvement Workshop, where we'd have had a number of people in the same room and flip charts and all sorts of things like that, discussing what it would look like and how it would feel and how everybody would work together, we were basically doing it in a darkened room with one or two people and then my laptop talking to the architects. So I think that was quite challenging. But having said that, I think the communication with individual departments and the architects was probably enhanced because we had to do it that way, and people's voices were heard individually as opposed to maybe being lost in the crowd, if you like. So it was a challenge, but it's worked out really well in the end. And then there are some other challenges in terms of where people were going to be situated and what it was going to look like. And, you know, clearly when you've got different people's views, you get lots of options of what you could do, but you have to make a decision at the end of the day, and sometimes that decision may not be what an individual or a small group of people would want. But they're the challenges that as a facilitator, that's what you have to do, and you have to manage those kind of situations. So they're just the usual challenges of the type of job. What I've enjoyed most, as besides working with the clinical team and really kind of getting to know some of the patients better as well. You know, I mean, you do meet patients as a directorate manager, but you actually don't really engage with them on that kind of level. It's usually either a complaint or they're handing money over or something like that. But actually finding out what it is that they like about something has been really insightful, I think. And then the biggest thing that I've thoroughly enjoyed was actually at the end of November when we broke ground, and I did feel at that point that my job was done. I had got to the point where we were really, it was happening, it wasn't going to go away, and you know, that build was definitely going to take place, and I'm sure I wasn't the only one with a little tear in my eye at that time.
It was a huge day, and it was lovely to get so many people together and, you know, get boots on, hard hats, finally kindly be there on that day.
Yeah.
And we welcomed along Michael, who's one of our patients, and his wife, and they were absolutely delighted to be there and to be part of it as well, because our patients have played such a huge part in kind of pulling together these plans. And some of the staff were down there, and it was just lovely to we all caught on camera, and we were in the news, and that was fantastic, because it was just such a milestone day. And I know that there's a time lapse that's been created of the plan, so we'll be able to look back and see how it's all formed, and it's just going to be so interesting to see how it develops. So I'm so glad that we managed to catch you for a chat, because you've been such a huge part of the plans. And you know, this is your project. Your every time you drive past it, I'll go in there and be like, yeah, that's mine.
Well, I am a Sunderland girl, and I will be driving past it on a regular basis, and I'll be fascinated to see it rising from the ground, if you like, because at the moment it clearly is just a building site with nothing on it because they're doing the foundations. But you know, by the end of this year, you'll certainly see the infrastructure up there. And going in, and I do hope that I'll be invited back to have a little look around.
I think you'll be on the list. I wouldn't worry. And it's just going to be so lovely to see it develop and become part of the city landscape, and just become a new landmark in the city centre, because it's such a changing place at the moment. So thank you so much for joining us. I'm really glad that you were able to take us through it.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Our People Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and check out our other stories. Hit subscribe and keep up to date with the latest, and catch up with what we've been up to on our Twitter, Facebook and Instagram pages. Just search for our name.